in honor of the throwback SmackDown that we got to cover tonight here on May the 7th, 2021, I wanted to go ahead and just play my favorite, my personal favorite SmackDown theme song over the years. And this was actually the song that was the SmackDown theme song whenever I just started watching wrestling again back in late 2014, early 2015, if I'm not mistaken. Just right before it actually became SmackDown Live. So I just wanted to share in honor, I guess you can say, of all of the SmackDown memories and the things that they were showing throughout the episode. I just wanted to go ahead and play that at the very beginning here of the episode, just as a little treat for you guys. But with all that being said, as always, welcome to the SmackDown Review here on the WWE Podcast Network. As always, I'm your host, Michael Ritter. You can find me on Twitter at Michael5Ritter and on Instagram at MichaelRitter5. As I mentioned a little bit earlier, we're going to be covering the SmackDown that aired on May 7th, 2021, labeled as the Throwback SmackDown. And all in all, I think they did a pretty good job with the whole gimmick that they were going based on the throwback theme. I think that they did a pretty good job choosing which moments to pull back from, where they were just basically showing the greatest moments from SmackDown history, or at least some of the favorites that they had. I mean, they showed Triple H versus The Rock for the WWF Championship. They showed Arnold Schwarzenegger whenever he made an appearance there on SmackDown. They also showed Stone Cold Steve Austin and Booker T in their grocery shopping store fight. That was a little tough one to get out there, but you know what I'm talking about, where they were basically just beating the hell out of each other with all of the grocery items there, like the carton of milk. I remember that one for sure. And then Booker T ended up getting put on the little checkout area where he was basically getting scanned and continued to getting beat up by Stone Cold Steve Austin. So that was one of the most famous clips, and I didn't realize that was actually on SmackDown. So I all this time I just assumed that was on Raw. But they actually, you know, they mentioned a lot of other moments too, like Edge tag teaming with Hulk Hogan to win the tag team championships. I actually had no idea that even happened, so I thought that was pretty cool. That was something that I learned today. And just in terms of the show itself, I mean, normally you guys know how they do these retro shows, these reunion shows, these all-star shows, whatever you want to call it. I mean, they had one not too long ago on Raw, and it was just a little bit different. They brought back a lot of older guys. I like the way they did it here on SmackDown. They really didn't rely on the older talent. They really didn't even show it. I mean, they didn't bring anybody out. The only thing that they did do was they showed some highlights, some moments from other matches that happened over the years, just to kind of, you know, I mean, it was a throwback SmackDown, so of course they're going to play some throwback matches. I personally thought whenever they first showed that clip of the WWF Championship match with Triple H and The Rock, I personally thought that, is this going to be one of those episodes where all they do is show us like full matches from like years ago, like reruns? Because, I mean, they've done that before. I know that they were doing it like right whenever the pandemic started. That's kind of how Raw was for a couple weeks there. They were just like showing reruns from pay-per-views that just happened. Or, I mean, it was relevant to the storylines that were going on, but I thought that it was just kind of weird. And that's what it reminded me of. But, I mean, obviously, once the video package started to play, I realized, all right, that's all this is. It's the video package, basically just highlights from the match. And this is going to be a regular episode of SmackDown, just with a few of these little highlight reels during the show, and that's basically exactly what it was. One negative I will say about this whole retro SmackDown, throwback SmackDown stage that they had is they didn't commit all the way. They had the graphic that only us watching at home could see with the fist. I mean, everybody knows the big fist. I mean, DJ Kuzmo mentioned it on the mailbag this week. I've seen a lot of people mentioning it on Twitter, as well as the Fox account itself, like the WWE on Fox. I know they even mentioned the fist. So I was kind of surprised that they didn't actually bring it back, considering that, as far as I know, they still have it. So, I mean, I was kind of, you know, I was expecting that, and I was a little bit surprised that they didn't make that decision to do the stage like that. I feel like that would have been, you know, the finishing touch, you know, the thing that really pushed it over the top, in my personal opinion. But I do think they did a pretty good job here on this throwback episode of SmackDown. For what it normally is, I feel like this is definitely a good version of these throwback episodes, and hopefully we can get more like this and not just relying on the older talent guys coming in there and them just doing it to draw ratings. I feel like this is a way where you can honor your past. I mean, even Pat McAfee and Michael Cole, they were dressed to the occasion. The announce table was just like a little table there. There was none of the extra stuff that's on it nowadays. I really like that. I do feel like they could have went a little bit more old school with the ring. I mean, you have the announce table looking really old school, but you still have the LED, you know, boards on all the posts, all four of them, instead of just having a regular ring. One other thing, I guess, while I'm talking about it quickly, is the referees in the blue shirts. And I'll mention whenever I actually notice that, and it happens pretty early in the show, which I will get to. I mean, we're already 6 minutes in it, 6 minutes in here, and I haven't even really gotten to the stuff that happened on SmackDown. I'm just kind of excited about the whole nostalgic feeling that we had watching it. And I will say the referees in the blue shirts, I really like that touch. That's something that actually adds something to it. I do believe that. Just a few weeks ago, I was watching some old school wrestling stuff on the network, or Peacock, I guess now, but I was watching some old school stuff, and I noticed that the referees from SmackDown were wearing blue shirts, and I thought to myself, man, that was a nice touch. I really wish they would continue to do that. I am thankful that they at least, you know, they're staying true to keeping the ropes on Raw red, the ropes on SmackDown blue. I'm glad that they're still doing that. Whenever I came back to watch wrestling in 2014, 2015, all of the ropes were white. And that, I thought that was weird, because they weren't white whenever I stopped watching. I mean, it was like red, blue, and even black for the dual-branded pay-per-views. So the fact that they were white for, you know, a few years there before the brand extension really came back in 2016, I didn't like that whole white look. And sometimes they still bring those back, like for WrestleMania or things like that. But me personally, I'm not a fan of those. I like whenever the ropes match the brand itself. And the referees, too. I mean, I with the blue shirts, and they even had the old-school WWE logo. It wasn't this new, the WWE Network version of the WWE logo. It was the old-school version of the WWE logo that they kind of branched off the old-school WWF logo, just without the two lines there. You guys know whenever they made that switch, that logo was on Michael Cole's jacket, and it was also on the referees' shirts with the old school SmackDown logo itself. I just thought that this was pretty cool, and I'm glad that it's not going to be a long-term thing. But just, I mean, since I've been covering SmackDown, this is the first time that they've actually really pulled that far, you know, into the past and given us something like this. So I definitely appreciated it. But I guess with all that being said, we can go ahead and dive into this SmackDown review, this throwback SmackDown. And it starts off, like most SmackDowns do, with the Tribal Chief, Roman Reigns, coming to the ring with Paul Heyman and Jey Uso. And this time, Paul Heyman is the one who speaks first. And he calls for a 10-bell salute for Daniel Bryan. But, for some reason, Paul Heyman makes the sound effects himself. Like, he's the one who makes the ding-ding. He makes the bell noises himself, almost sarcastically. It looked like Roman and Jey Uso were maybe trying to hold in their laughter, or maybe just trying to keep a straight face. And a lot of stuff happened here. I mean, this opening segment, I will say, I mean, they started off with the much-anticipated return of Jimmy Uso. People have been mentioning for the past few months, what's Jimmy going to do whenever he comes back? Is he going to be added to this faction? Are they going to just wreck the entire roster as a three-man group instead of just Roman and Jey Uso? I mean, you can imagine that Jimmy being in the group would definitely make them a more lethal faction. So, I mean, his return, that's what I thought whenever he first came back. Oh, man, things are going to get real here on SmackDown if Jimmy is alongside Jey, basically just being Roman Reigns' right-hand man. But as we will find out throughout this episode, that's really not what happened. Jimmy Uso definitely had other plans, or at least that's what it seems like. But their little family reunion is also interrupted here. Cesaro comes out, and let's see, yeah. He comes out, but before he can really even get a word in, if I'm not mistaken, he's attacked pretty early by Seth Rollins. He comes up from behind, and they're broken up. That whole little brawl is broken up by the people, or the officials, in blue shirts. And that's where I noticed it. That was the first time I was like, oh man, they're committing all the way here. They're going to bring out the blue shirts. And that's where I really got excited here for the episode. But it goes to it doesn't even go to commercial break yet. Before it goes to commercial break, we get Teddy Long. He comes out, and he makes the announcement that if Cesaro can defeat Seth Rollins tonight, that he will earn a one-on-one match against Roman Reigns at Backlash for the Universal Championship. And one little fun fact, one thing to note here, is that Cesaro has never had a one-on-one match for a World Championship. Michael Cole announced that during the match here that we'll get to in just a second against Seth Rollins. So I just thought that was pretty crazy that Seth Rollins has really never had a one-on-one match for a world championship. And, I mean, it is wild. I know that people are bringing up the stats of how long it's been since so-and-so has been pinned just in a one-on-one match. I know Roman Reigns has a pretty impressive streak since he's been pinned. But one person who does as well is that, and that is Cesaro. Cesaro has a pretty impressive streak, and I really wish that I could know the exact number, but I'm pretty sure it's like 2019 or something like that. Cesaro has not been pinned in a one-on-one match, and I could be wrong, but for some reason I feel like I saw that somewhere. So, I mean, if somebody knows what I'm talking about, definitely share it with me, or if I just am completely off, definitely share that with me as well, so I know that I am not absolutely crazy here. But like I said, that match gets announced by Teddy Long, so we get Seth Rollins versus Cesaro, as you can expect, a great match. Wasn't like their WrestleMania match by any means, but I mean, anytime these two guys get in the ring together, you can get excited for what they're going to do. The Usos, for whatever reason, decide to stay out there at ringside, and I thought that was weird right out the gate. I was like, okay, are they all going to stay out there? But they, throughout the match, they showed Roman Reigns and Paul Heyman watching back there on Roman's chair, just looking at the monitor. So I was confused. Roman Reigns isn't in this match. Why the hell are the Usos out here? So, I mean, I knew something was going to happen. And then eventually, the Usos do make a late attempt to get involved, but Seth Rollins stops Jey Uso and says, hey, look, I'm not Roman Reigns. I don't need your help. And I guess he doesn't really think that Seth Rollins is serious. He must continue to try. Seth really doesn't like that. And he eventually shoves Jey Uso down. And then, of course, with Jimmy Uso standing right there, he doesn't like that. So eventually he meets Seth Rollins with a super kick right to the face, and then basically just takes him out right there. He makes his way back into the ring, and that is where he is hit with a Gotch neutralizer by Cesaro, and then that's it. I mean, ball game right there. Cesaro gets his one-on-one match at Backlash against Roman Reigns. But like I said, this is weird. I mean, why were the Usos out there? And ultimately, they helped Cesaro. I mean, at least Jimmy Uso did, and Roman Reigns definitely doesn't appreciate that. In fact, he's pretty pissed off about that. But he's not the only one who's pissed off. Seth Rollins is pissed off, too, that the Usos got involved. I mean, this was all just kind of weird for me as it was happening. Obviously, thinking about it now, in hindsight, just kind of looking at how it was. I mean, obviously, okay, Cesaro's in that match. They're trying to do the heel thing, or at least Jey is. And maybe at some point try to make sure that Cesaro doesn't get this win. And he does not get that opportunity against Roman Reigns at Backlash. So that's obviously, okay, well, that's obviously why the Usos were out there. But still, I mean, just when it was going on, I was a little bit confused as to why they decided to stay out there at ringside and watch the match. But I mean, obviously I got a little bit of explanation, or I guess a little bit of clarity as the night evolved. I guess you could say, or just went on a little bit. And that's where I started to realize what was going on there with those guys. But moving on here, like I just mentioned a little bit ago, Seth Rollins was not very happy with his match ending in disqualification. Or, I mean, it didn't end in disqualification. Scratch that. That was my mess up. The fact that his match got interfered with, he didn't like that at all. And I will say just quickly, since I completely messed that up, and I will add, because this is a thought that I've been thinking about, is I like whenever a match can end, or whenever somebody interferes with a match and they get away with it. Because I feel like that's kind of rare. I mean, or at least, you know, a big time one. Obviously, you know, I'm not counting, you know, a person like Lana, who's there for Rusev, or somebody like Maurice, who's there for Miz, who just kind of does that little heel thing, maybe hold their legs on the rope. I'm talking about somebody, you know, coming in from the crowd, hitting one of the wrestlers with a spine buster in the ring, leaving the referee not noticing, and the heel still getting away with that and getting the win. That's something that I feel like they don't do anymore. And if they do, I guess I just don't really notice it. I feel like nowadays they get caught. The match ends in a DQ, a false finish. Next thing you know, we come back and there's a 6-man tag match or something like that. I just feel like there's a little bit of a lost art in that. And it really makes you hate that person. The person that interfered, if they get away with it, you're like, oh man, you mother effer. You know, like you want that person to get their ass kicked. And they don't, and you know, you just don't get that anger, I guess, that investment in the actual interference if, you know, they get caught. So, I mean, to me personally, I just feel like this kind of gave me a little bit of that feeling. Like Jey Uso and them got involved, but for whatever reason, the referee didn't see it. And the match went on, and Cesaro still ended up getting that win. And the interference by the Uso ended up biting Roman Reigns in the ass this time instead of actually helping him, which has usually been the case here with Jey Uso since he has been, quote-unquote, main event Jey Uso. But, like I said, before I got completely off topic, like I said a little bit before that, Seth Rollins did not appreciate that. He did not like that his match got interfered with. So he went to Roman Reigns himself and spoke to him directly and said, look, I'm furious, right? He didn't say it, but you could tell. I'm furious as hell about what happened with Jey Uso. Who do I need to be pissed off at? Do I need to be pissed off at you? Do I need to be pissed off at Jey Uso? I mean, tell me what the hell happened here. Was that your idea? And Roman says, look, I know that Jey Uso screwed you over. But keep in mind, you losing screwed me over. So now I have to deal with that at Backlash and face those repercussions by defending my championship one-on-one against Cesaro. But Roman Reigns does then assure Seth Rollins that he's going to take care of what happened during Seth's match. And then Seth Rollins says that if he doesn't, then he's going to do it himself. You guys all know the drill. That basically happens. But what I took away from this is I really liked that Seth Rollins actually had the balls to go stand up to Roman Reigns. It's something that we really haven't seen. I mean, outside of Edge and Daniel Bryan, Roman Reigns has always just kind of been that guy who makes everybody in the locker room cower down. Or at least that's just what you expect. That's the vibe that you get. That's how they've been building him up, just to make him seem like he's head and shoulders above everybody else. And just seeing a guy like Seth Rollins, who obviously has history with Roman Reigns, they're not going to tie back on that on camera anyways. I mean, Seth Rollins did say, look, after everything we've been through, I don't want to come in here like this and, you know, basically be approaching you like this and demanding this, but look, tell me what the hell's going on. I just like seeing that from Seth Rollins. He's definitely a worthy opponent to Roman Reigns, and that's something that you can sign me up for right now. I mean, there's a lot of guys here on the SmackDown roster that I personally think are legitimate contenders to Roman Reigns. I mean, not without getting too much more off topic, because I'm going to pencil it in here where I'm at on the show, and I will just take a little bit of a sidebar here, because I did listen to the Weekend Review with Zach Smith and Matt. And I heard where they were talking about somebody on the SmackDown roster being built, or at least being legitimate, or a legitimate threat eventually to take the title from Roman Reigns. And they said it was Big E. And I completely agree with that. One other name that I'll throw in there is Shinsuke Nakamura. I will say that if we're talking about potential and somebody who, if booked properly to look strong enough, has that resume, I guess you can say, all the qualifications to beat Roman Reigns, it's somebody like Shinsuke Nakamura, and that's who I can get behind. So the three people I will say on the SmackDown roster who can take the title off of Roman Reigns and make it a little bit believable: Big E, Shinsuke Nakamura, and Seth Rollins. I'm not sure who. I mean, obviously Big E might be in line first, but I think Shinsuke and Seth Rollins are definitely worthy of being in that discussion as well. Continuing on here in the show, we get a backstage segment with Teddy Long and Sonya Deville. And this is whenever we find out that Teddy Long is actually the fill-in, I guess you can say, the replacement, the substitute for Adam Pearce, who's not there. Sonya Deville does make that announcement here in this segment, but they are actually approached while they're there talking backstage. They're approached by Sami Zayn. And Sami begins to try to fill in Teddy Long about the conspiracy going on here in WWE against himself. But Teddy Long eventually, he tries to announce it, but I mean, of course, he does his little you go one-on-one with The Undertaker stick, and he continues to try, and eventually he gets out that it's going to be a 10-man tag match between Sami Zayn, Apollo Crews, Alpha Academy, and Baron Corbin versus the Street Profits, Kevin Owens, Big E, and Shinsuke Nakamura. So that match ends up coming up way later in the show, but this is whenever we find out about it, and that's what told me, all right, that's probably going to take up a good chunk of the show, and it actually doesn't. Compared to how some of these other matches started, that match started with about 30 minutes left in SmackDown, and I thought, okay, well, we might not get more about Roman Reigns and Jey Uso, because, I mean, they kind of hinted that we were going to get a little bit more in that later in the show, but whenever this match was scheduled to start around 8:30 Central Time, I was like, well, with how they've been doing matches lately, they've been making them really long, so this could be it. But, I mean, it ended up not being the final segment of the show, and obviously we'll get there. Keeping things backstage here, Roman Reigns, things get a little bit juicy here. Roman Reigns gives Jey Uso a nice little warm welcome by ripping his ass for what happened earlier in the night with his interference in the match with Seth Rollins and Cesaro, how that ultimately costed him. And Jimmy basically stops him right there. This is where you know, all right, Jimmy Uso is not here to make a Samoan dynasty. He's not here to be another right-hand man to the tribal chief. He is here to make right with what's going on in his family, or at least not, or make it obvious that he's not going to stand for it. That's kind of what I got. But I mean, it's still kind of patchy, I guess you can say, because they still attack Cesaro a little bit later in the show. I mean, so you don't really know. What are they doing here? I mean, are you in or are you out? I mean, are you with the Tribal Chief and your brother Jay, or are you not? Because, I mean, if you watch SmackDown, you can kind of tell it was like a roller coaster. Sometimes I was convinced, okay, Jay is definitely not doing this. And there were other times I was like, well, I mean, is he, you know, reluctantly doing it? Is he just kind of making it obvious that he doesn't want to? I just kind of couldn't get a full grasp on what Jimmy Uso was really thinking. And just speaking right here in this segment, he basically tells him that, look, you're not going to be talking to me like you talk to my brother. And then he follows it up by telling Roman that he isn't no, you guys know what he said. And he walks away. So that right there lets you know, oh my gosh, dude, Jey Uso is here. He means business. And this is what I like to see. I really like this version of Jimmy Uso. Sorry, just being completely honest. I mean, I feel like just in these couple segments, he reminded us why he is the superior Uso and why Jey Uso was in his shadow for all those years. Whenever he's gone and you only see Jay, and Jay gets elevated to the main event picture, and he's getting pushed ultimately by the people on SmackDown, and he's been, you know, heavily featured for months now. I mean, and he deserves it. He's doing great. But this right here shows you, all right, there's a reason why this other Uso was the star in the group and why he obviously had more potential. I mean, he's better on the mic. He's better in the ring, in my opinion. So I just feel like we were kind of reminded of that here in this episode of SmackDown, now that Jey Uso is hopefully officially returned to the SmackDown roster. But up next, we get a pretty quick match. Ruby Riott versus Carmella, a women's division match. And Carmella wins very quickly via submission. I don't know what that move is called. You guys know what it is, where she basically just wraps her legs around her neck. She has one hand on the mat to basically just give herself some leverage. And she has the other hand on her foot, just, you know, applying more pressure to that lock. I can't remember what it's called. I know that it has a name, but it's slipping my mind right now. But that's how she gets the win. I mean, it's not really a noteworthy match. Nothing really happened. I did think it was kind of weird that the Riott Squad haven't been really featured as a tag team. I thought that was definitely weird. They haven't really been on the screen here in the past few weeks, and whenever they do finally get some airtime, it's a singles match. So I thought that was a little bit odd. Hopefully they can get back in the tag team picture. And speaking of that tag team picture, we do get a little bit of an update, or at least another segment about that a little bit later in the show. But before we do that, we get Bayley. She comes to the ring and she cuts a promo. And Bayley comes out saying that she wants to pay tribute to some of the past women's champions just in respect to the throwback edition of SmackDown. So she goes on to list some former champions such as Alondra Blaze, Jacqueline, Lita, Trish, Ivory, Beth Phoenix, Molly Holly, and she even mentions Bianca Belair. But after she mentioned each one of their names, she kind of took like small jabs at each one of them. So you kind of knew, all right, this is kind of like a little bit of a half-assed compliment. Like, she doesn't mean this. It's almost like a backhanded compliment, I guess you can say, because she added in a little bit of a comment. Well, I mean, you know, it's not as impressive as my women's championship streak, but, you know, I mean, still good and nothing to, you know, write home about. But I mean, Hall of Fame worthy, you know, no big deal. You know, you guys know what Bayley means by this. She's being a little bit arrogant. I do love this about Bayley, because she's embraced this role. She's really getting better at it every week that she does it, and she gets more airtime. So I want to see more of Bayley on my TV screen. And even if that means she beats Bianca, I don't think it's going to happen. You guys know how they like to have championship victories at WrestleMania stick around. And Bianca is certainly a champion who they might have carry it all the way to SummerSlam, but since she won the championship, I haven't been excited about what she's been doing. I was more excited about the climb, you know, her getting to Sasha Banks and her capturing that championship. Although I did feel like it got a little bit old towards the end there. Once she got it, I felt like that was going to be the refresh button. Okay, now she's going to get new opponents. It's going to be a different angle here where she's the champion. Now, how is she going to defend it? And I just feel like the opportunities really haven't been there. I mean, Bayley is her first opponent and her first stepping stone as a women's champion. So we'll see how she does in this first title defense. But they're doing a good job making Bayley seem like she's worthy of this match and definitely capable of winning the championship. I mean, and she might. You never know. I mean, it's not like it's guaranteed that they're going to make these championship victories last. So if they're going to make any of them lose, I mean, you know it's not going to be Roman Reigns. I mean, Apollo Crews might drop his title, but I mean, I don't know. Bianca Belair is somebody who you definitely just want to keep an eye on as somebody who, if WWE isn't liking what she's doing as champion, they will definitely call an audible and get that strap on somebody else. And I'm definitely not advocating for that. I just want to see Bianca Belair make the most of this championship run. And I think maybe beating a person like Bayley here at Backlash might be a good stepping stone and a good first opponent for her. So we'll see what eventually happens. But as far as this program itself with Bayley, or this segment, sorry, with her out there cutting a promo, Bayley goes on to call Bianca insecure and says that she, referring to herself, is going to be Bianca's first and last challenger. And then, as you would expect, Bianca comes out to defend herself. And after a lengthy response, she basically just tells Bayley to worry about herself. Don't worry about me, because she says, I'm not insecure at all. You have no idea what me and my fans, what keeps us going, what powers us, and what keeps us together. But apparently Bayley cannot hold in her laughter any longer, and she begins to do like a loud fake laugh to try to catch Bianca Belair off guard and then attack her. But Bianca Belair was definitely prepared for this, and she at first began to make light work of Bayley, up until Bayley grabbed her by her earring, which looked, I didn't know if they were going to go full on Jeff Hardy here and, you know, rip the earring out. I was hoping not. I definitely don't like seeing stuff like that. I know some people do. They could watch, you know, people have surgery on their insides and, you know, have no problem with that. They just have really strong stomachs. It's not like I'll throw up, but it just makes me like, ugh, you know, I'd rather not see somebody get their earring ripped out, I guess is what initially made me say that, without me, you know, tipping my hand and telling you guys that I don't like seeing stuff like that. But anyways, after she pulled her down by her earring, she began to step on her hair just to kind of keep her on the ground. And then ultimately, Bayley gets the upper hand here. And according to Michael Cole, she sent a message. So there you go. They got the corporate statement or the corporate message, whatever it is. They got it out in the public. So, you know, they hit their minimum requirement for the episode. They got their roll-up in, which we will get to here in just a little bit, and they got their send a message statement in there. So WWE and Michael Cole are doing their job, you know, hitting on all cylinders. But let's see here, what is next in the episode? Oh yeah, Jey Uso, he approaches Jimmy backstage and he just asks him, hey, did you mean what you said back there, you know, whenever you basically just called me a b-word? I mean, that's pretty much what he said. And Jimmy doubles down, and he just basically says, yeah, and he takes it a step further by saying that you're the only reason that Roman Reigns is champion right now. You do whatever he says. I don't like it at all. And this was a very passionate promo from Jimmy Uso, and he knocked it out of the park. This is another part where that made me write down here. Jimmy is superior. He is the Uso. And it's funny because Roman Reigns, later on in the show, he refers to Jay as, quote-unquote, the Uso. And I just think that's wrong. And I don't want them to pull a full on Iconics here. Do not split them up. Just because I personally feel like Jimmy is, you know, a little bit sharper on the mic and maybe just a smidge better in the ring, it doesn't mean that you should split them up. I mean, that's just my personal opinion. I want to see this tag team stay together. I mean, it's very rare. They're identical twins. There's no reason to split them up. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I'm not even going to get into the whole tag team thing because you guys all know how that goes. Trying to keep a tag team together in WWE in this day and age, yeah, just don't even try it. But anyway, moving on here, we get a one-on-one match, Rey Mysterio versus Dolph Ziggler, or at least that's what it was supposed to be. But Dolph Ziggler comes out to the ring with a mic, and he's immediately just poking fun at Dominic, just antagonizing him, basically calling him out. And eventually Dominic says, all right, you want a piece of me? You got it. He takes his dad's place, and he hops in the match. So now it's one-on-one, Dominic versus Dolph Ziggler. And this match was no more than 3 minutes long. Like I said, this is where that roll-up happened. Dominic ended up getting the win, and now we get to look forward to Dominic and Rey Mysterio versus the Dirty Dogs at WrestleMania Backlash for the SmackDown Tag Team Championships. And my gut right here tells me, yes, Mysterio and Dominic are going to win. I think that's the the obvious thing that, you know, with how they've been hyping up, it could be the first time in history that a father and son win the championship. I say right now, I'd say they have about an 80% chance of getting the win. I'll leave that 20% open for Vince McMahon and his just... Every now and then he has that urge just to break people's hearts, you know, and just destroy people. So he might build it up and think, oh, we're going to get this sweet moment where a father and son are going to win the tag team championships only to crush you and have them lose. And Rey Mysterio probably never wrestle again in WWE. I mean, that's just the, you know, the absolute worst case scenario of what could happen here. But hey, I would not put it past Vince McMahon to do something that drastic. But I mean, obviously I'm halfway joking there, but that was a quick match. And right here we get another quick one. I had no idea this match was even going to happen until it was literally announced right before it started. And it's Reginald versus Tamina. And I mean, I literally had to take a double look. Like, what? Reginald versus Tamina? And yes, sure enough, that is exactly what happened. And this match was a little bit different. I mean, Reggie kept doing like back handsprings to dodge Tamina's shots that she was showing. You could tell that it was a little bit choreographed, like they had practiced that a little bit to make sure that it was timed right with her clothesline attempts and him just kind of flipping right out of it. But she does get her hands on him immediately, and once she does that, as you would expect, she just starts manhandling him, throwing him all around the ring into the corner of the turnbuckles. But the match doesn't last long. Eventually, Shayna Baszler gets involved first, and then Natty and Nia Jax both get in the ring, which eventually leads to Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler putting a pretty bad beating on Tamina and Natalya. And with how strong Natalya and Tamina have looked here recently, I mean, I guess it is kind of surprising actually seeing them get their butts kicked and just not be the one standing at the end. Because I mean, for a long time there, even if it was backstage, if it was the Raw tag team division or the women or the SmackDown women's tag team division, it really didn't matter. And now that I'm saying that, I actually don't know if there is a separate women's or men's tag team divisions on the separate shows. I mean, that's, like I said, I'm not going to just go back to what I just turned the page on with the whole tag team things again. Just as I'm talking about it, it's kind of weird. I'm not really sure if those women's tag team championships are even going to be defended at WrestleMania Backlash. Just given that it's WrestleMania Backlash, you could expect that maybe, all right, Natty and Tamina get a chance here. But as of right now, Shayna and Nia survive one more week with those championship belts on their shoulders. And, I mean, Reginald's definitely helping them out here. And even getting in the ring, he's just gotten in the ring with Tamina. And I'm not really sure, I guess if Shayna got involved, then Tamina would get the disqualification, or Reggie would get the disqualification, and Tamina would get the win. So I guess he did take an L here to Tamina, if you want to get technical, but I don't know. We'll see. It did kind of make me want to see Reginald versus James Ellsworth. I mean, give me that match on a pre-show one day, just on a kickoff show. I don't care who has to get kicked off the card. If you can give me James Ellsworth versus Reginald in a steel cage, I will sign up to watch that match. But anyway, moving on here, we get that much anticipated 10-man tag team match that Teddy Long had a very hard time getting out when he was trying to announce it, but he eventually did. And this match was extremely fast-paced. Like I said, it started at 8:30 Central Time, and I was very concerned that this was going to be the very last segment of the show. I thought, oh man, we're going to get another long match here, and this is how they're going to end the show, but that's not what happened. It ended up only lasting about 15 minutes. And there was a lot of action outside of the ring. You know, guys getting individually taken out with separate spots. Montez Ford obviously going over the top rope. That's going to take out a few guys. And that's pretty much what happened. But Corbin does hit the end of days on Shinsuke Nakamura and get the win for his respective team. But I will say, I wrote down here that Baron Corbin and Montez Ford both stood out in this match. Just watching their performances, they both looked strong. They both looked like the arrow was pointing up, and I definitely hope so. Whenever Baron Corbin was the one who attacked Drew McIntyre, I thought there might have been some big things in store for him, but they really haven't touched up on that at all. We really haven't gotten to see Baron Corbin in any type of important program or anything like that since then. So maybe this is just, you know, one small step in that right direction, just getting him involved, getting him some airtime. Eventually some of these champions, I mean, maybe some, if we even get a babyface champion anytime soon. I mean, as of right now, the only babyface champion on SmackDown is Bianca Belair. So it's going to be hard for Baron Corbin. He's not going to go after Apollo Crews, the guy that was just on his team today. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me, but Right now, I don't think that would happen. And even if it did, with Commander Aziz in his corner, I don't think that Baron Corbin is a guy that they're going to even have a shot taking that title off of Apollo Crews. So, I mean, I feel like right now he's kind of stuck, you know, walking in place. But, I mean, being on TV and looking strong in a match like this is certainly better than just being out of our sight and off TV for a little while. Although I will say that that might be the best thing for Corbin, just if you're talking about his character. He needs a little bit of a reboot. I'm glad they might be dropping that whole King gimmick. I'm not really sure. I mean, during the whole Teddy Long struggling to get this match out, he called him King Booker. So, I mean, that was kind of just obviously he did it on purpose. But so they're not completely trying to drop the King thing. But, I mean, I think that would probably be the best thing for Baron Corbin. I want to see him get a little bit of a serious run here. Like I've said multiple times, in San Antonio for the Royal Rumble a few years back, 2017 to be exact, whenever Randy Orton won and Baron Corbin eliminated Braun Strowman by himself, I was in that crowd and I heard how wild and how big they popped for that moment. I thought, oh my gosh, I just witnessed Baron Corbin get over with the crowd and I was actually here part of it. I thought that was pretty cool. And I mean, like I said, I mean, that was 4 or 5 years ago. Nothing's really happened with Baron Corbin since then. I mean, he hasn't really done anything. I mean, winning King of the Ring is the only thing that he can hang his hat on. Winning Money in the Bank, yeah, he cashed it in and failed. So there's really nothing else that Baron Corbin has. So me personally, both of them, him and Montez Ford. Montez Ford just looks like he is on another level. Whenever he's wrestling all these tag team wrestlers, whether it's the Alpha Academy, the Dirty Dogs, it really doesn't matter. Even next to his own tag team partner, he is... I mean, it sucks that the divisions are different, so he isn't going to get the same rocket ship attached to his back that his wife has. In the women's division, she's absolutely getting, you know, shot up to the top right now. It's going to be a lot slower of a process for Montez Ford. He's the one who's in the tag team right now. They're going to have to deal with that whenever that time comes. And then how are you going to build this guy? How are you going to establish him as a single star by himself? That's going to be interesting. I'm really looking forward to when that happens. But like I said, I mean, this is kind of a tag team themed episode. I keep bringing this up. So I'm not advocating for the Street Profits to be split up yet. I think that they are a good tag team. But I'm just saying, obviously, we all know who the star is in the group. And just looking into the future, into the crystal ball, I guess you can say, you do wonder, how is Montez Ford going to be on his own? And that's something that I'm definitely looking forward to seeing. But like I said, Baron Corbin gets the win here for his team in this 10-man tag match. And that leaves us with our final segment. Roman Reigns coming to the ring to address Jimmy Uso. And he's almost immediately interrupted by Jimmy. And Jimmy brings up Roman Reigns and Jey Uso's I Quit match from back in October in the Hell in a Cell. That might have actually been the last time that we saw Jimmy Uso. But they showed the highlights from that match and, I mean, almost did a full recap of it. And they kind of just reminded you of what happened, how, you know, Jimmy Uso got involved and he even got put in that guillotine lock by Roman Reigns. So after they show that and after getting lectured, because that's basically what happens, Roman Reigns begins to just lecture Jimmy Uso, where he calls Jay the Uso and says, look, me and Jay put that past us. Now we're on to bigger and better things. What are you doing? I mean, are you with us or are you not? That's pretty much what he's trying to get out of him. And then he eventually just tells him to leave, go home, get out of here. If you're not going to be with us, you have no reason to be here on SmackDown. So you can just go home and watch TV, and you can be the one who tells your kids why you're at home with them rather than being on TV with their uncle and their cousin. So I thought that was pretty good. It's always good whenever they can pull reality in there a little bit, and you know that Roman Reigns is literally related to Jimmy Uso's. I don't know if Jimmy has kids. I mean, him and Naomi are together, so that was kind of like a wait. I did not know that. If Jimmy Uso has kids, then they're probably not Naomi's, from what I would expect. But that's obviously something that I have no knowledge about, so I'm not even going to continue to talk about it. But basically, that just kind of threw me off guard there whenever they said that. But eventually, Jimmy does try to leave after Roman Reigns tells him to go home, just get out of here. Jimmy tries, and Jey Uso stops him, chases him up the ramp, which leaves Roman Reigns in the ring by himself. And what happens? Yes, you can expect it, or you can at least guess, and that's what it was. Cesaro, he runs into the ring, attacks Roman Reigns from behind, starts hitting him with a plethora of European uppercuts. The Usos both try to split it up, and this is where I said, all right, Jimmy, like, what's the deal here? are you with him or are you against him? Because after Cesaro started hitting those European uppercuts, he ended up getting hit with some as well, because he went in the ring and tried to defend his brother and Roman Reigns. So it's just one of those things that we will eventually find out more. I mean, next week we're going to know. Jimmy Uso might get more mic time. He might get an actual match. We can get to actually might see, all right, what's this dude got coming off this injury? Is he all right? I mean, I don't even know what kind of injury it was. They said knee injury multiple times, so I guess we'll see. I'll probably elaborate on it a little bit, but I'm looking forward to seeing Jimmy get back in the ring. I mean, I know it's probably not going to be a tag match. He might – actually, I don't know. Now that I'm saying that, it would be smart to just give the Usos a tag match next week against whatever. It literally does not matter what team you put them against, but you got to kind of show those cracks that Jimmy isn't really on board with what they're doing. He's not really, you know, down with the whole tribal chief thing. And I think that they can kind of have a little bit of a slow build, at least for a little bit, before they ultimately, you know, blow it up a little bit too soon, which is what I think is going to happen. But you can at least have a little bit of a slow start here if that's what you wanted to do. But either way, I want to see Jimmy in the ring, whether it's a tag team match, whether it's a singles match. It really doesn't matter to me. Just get him in the ring next week on SmackDown, and you will definitely have a very happy fan here. So, well, guys, I think that does do it for me. I think that is the SmackDown review in its entirety, the throwback edition of the SmackDown review. And I'm actually surprised. I was very, very tired, just being completely transparent here. Before I started recording, I was like, oh, my gosh, I am, you know, I'm sleepy. I felt like I was dozing off, and for whatever reason, as soon as I started here, I got that second wind, and I was able to finish this thing without a problem at all. So, I mean, I don't know if there was some powers from the wrestling god just coming down. As soon as I was able to talk wrestling with you guys, I knew that I was going to be all right and get through this thing, and I feel like that was definitely what happened here. So, definitely want to thank you guys for listening to this episode. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope that if you are a first-time listener, you will come back and listen to this. I mean, if this, for whatever reason, is your first episode that you chose here on the WWE Podcast Network, for whatever reason, go ahead and listen to all the other shows. They're damn good. They're just as good, if not better. So I definitely love listening to those as well. We got a show coming out this weekend, the Week in Review with Matt. He's going to go over everything that happened this week in wrestling, and those are always some of the best shows of the week. And then obviously, like Matt says and plugs all the time, get those voicemails in. I love hearing those. I love hearing new voices. I love hearing the returning voices, all the questions. It just kind of, it gives me content to think about. It gives me things to talk about here on my show as well. So I'm definitely listening to all those voicemails and all those emails that Matt gets. And it's definitely a little fun episode to listen to every week. With all that being said, guys, I hope you all have a fantastic weekend. I hope you all have a safe weekend. Walk passionately in the direction of your dreams. I'll talk to you soon.